Hello and welcome to Multiform. Every week we get together, talk about some Xbox news, the latest rumors, and games we're playing lately. New episodes post every Monday morning. You can email the show, questions at multiformpodcast.com. This is episode 223. I'm Tim Shelton, and I'm joined by Spencer Rain.
Yo, what up? I'm here.
And Gus Arden.
Hello.
So this week is going to be a lot of stuff about the holidays, and looking forward to the rest of the month, the November update, just kind of a lot of, updates on stuff. Although we did have an Xbox first party exclusive game released this week. So let's get right to the games we've been playing, and we'll kick it off with that. Pentiment has come out, and at least two of us have played it, and we have very divergent opinions. So Gus, I don't think you played Pentiment, right? You're odd man out on this?
Yes, I am the odd man out.
Okay. So I played it on release day Tuesday, and I played about an hour, because Spencer, you're past me, and I think you played, the last time we talked, you had played multiple hours.
I'm on act two, baby.
I didn't know there were acts. So
there's three acts.
Oh, wow. So you're already into at least the
I'm like at least second a third of the chunk. Way.
Yep. Okay. So I don't even know how to structure this. Spencer, do you want to go first? Because you have the most to say.
Yeah. So the divergent opinions are I like it, and Tim is either lukewarm or doesn't like it, because I played over 5 hours, almost 6 hours of it, actually. But yeah, I finished Act 1 this morning and started Act 2. And yeah, I mean, first of all, this definitely is not a game for everybody, because it's a lot of reading. There's no voice acting. There's no real music. I mean, there's sometimes like, every now and then there's like a little bit of ambient music, but like, I mean, it's very, very, very few and far between. Were you going to say something, Tim?
No, I clicked a wrong button. I was going to say, I think there is occasional like light, very minimal sound effects.
Well, there's lots of ambient sound effects. Like there's like birds and water and like,
no, I meant like the music. There's like a little bit of undertone, but it's very subtle. And I think I turned it down because I don't like overpowering music in my games.
Well, there's really is hardly any music. It's pretty much just, there's lots of sound effects, lots of interesting sound effects. But I don't know where to even start with this game, because it's super cool. I mean, I said, you know, back in the summer, I think when we first were getting our first looks at this game, that it was something that I was going to be interested in, if nothing else, because of the setting. And I think that's part of the reason why I like it so much, because it's
Germany in the 1400s, right?
1500s. So Act 1 is in 1518. Act 2, you jump forward 7 years. So it's 1525 in Act 2. And I assume, although I do not know, Act 3, maybe you go even further in the future. So you play as the same guy in both acts. You just are like, you go from being the like kind of journeyman artist to like a master artist in Act 2, which I just barely started. I'm like 10 minutes in. But you go back to the town that you're in Act 1, and you have like an apprentice guy, like kid with you. What were you going to say, Tim?
It's kind of, the things I liked were the humor in it that is injected into it is really funny. Like I saw somebody tweeted about the guy licking the boat.
Yeah.
There's a scene early in the game.
The very beginning of the game.
Yeah. Where you're on a boat. And
it's like a dream sequence, basically, is what that's part of.
You're right. It's before you wake up at the beginning of the game.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so it's during the montage before you take control. And there's this little guy licking the wooden boat that you're on, sailing to wherever you're going. And it's just hilarious. The animation is hilarious.
So I've realized that because the night that your character is sleeping before the end of Act 1, when you have to make the big decision at the end of Act 1, I won't spoil it. You go back to that dream sequence where you have like the Satan, the angel, the king, and then like the woman up in the balcony. So that shows up again. And the way that you know that that's happening is like when the clock thing moves, instead of it just going straight from like, you know, sleeping time to breakfast in the morning, it has like water and then there's like a boat. So I think that must be the way that they decided to kind of show like your character dreaming as he's boarding a boat and going off to his dream area. But yeah, I guess like it's cool because like the core of the first act, at least, is a murder mystery. Like, someone gets killed and you have to figure out in a couple of days who, because the archdeacon from...
Is it too much of a spoiler to tell me who was? Because the murder didn't happen where I was about an hour in.
No, I won't tell you who it is, because it is kind of a spoiler. Because it's...
Okay.
I don't want to tell who, because... I mean, I won't. I mean, it's not like it's not really that big of a deal. It probably won't be surprising when you see it. But yeah, there's a murder, and you and the guy, one of your characters, like, mentors, basically gets framed for it. One of the older monks in the abbey that you're working in. And so you have to figure out in like 2 days, like, who did it and find as many clues. And there's like 5 or 6 people essentially that you'll end up being able to like accuse, depending on the evidence that you find. And I actually only was able to accuse like 4 of them. And there was like I said, at least 5 or 6, maybe even there's a couple others. Like, there's an achievement that I saw and I was like, I don't even understand what this achievement means. Like, I don't even know who this could be referring to. So I didn't even find, I ran out of time. Like, I didn't even find all of the clues.
Oh, so there's a ticking clock. I didn't realize that.
Yes. So some investigations that you can do, or sorry, some parts of the investigation that you can do take time. And so like the game makes it pretty obvious. They're like, it'll be like, if I do this, it'll take a long time. Should I do it? Basically. And so that's when those things pop up, you're like, oh, okay. So this thing is going to move the clock forward and I need to make sure that this is what I want to do.
Interesting.
Because I figured out essentially it's logical. So like you do one thing and it kind of unlocks the next step along the line of figuring out if that character was the murderer or not. And so you can do bits and pieces of all of them and you'll get an incomplete picture and you can still then, you know, say like, I think it was this person because of I found 70% of the clues. I don't know if I was right. I honestly, like, I don't think from what I kind of lightly looked at things up on Reddit to try, but I tried not to spoil anything and I didn't spoil anything for myself, but it seems like there's a default person that gets executed for the murder, but other people that you essentially, if you can prove to the archdeacon enough that he believes you, he'll pick anybody, any of those other characters. But because this game is still relatively new, not a ton of people have beaten it yet. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have, but not a lot of people like on Reddit. Like, it's not a commonly known what happens type of a game yet. So a lot of people were like kind of speculating, or people that had beaten it weren't spoiling it. And they were just saying like, wait till Act 3. Cause the game kind of, cause like I said, you go forward 7 years. I just got back and essentially that's kind of why I want to keep playing. Cause I was like, I don't really know what's all going on here. Like, there's lots of, when you find more evidence for certain characters, there's lots of like threads of intrigue essentially. And because I wasn't able to get to the end of all of those rabbit trails, I don't know what I don't know. And that's kind of the hook for me. And so the abbot, who's the head of the abbey, he basically, you can either leave at the end of Act 1 with him hating you or him liking you, depending on the choices you've made, depending on who you got executed, etc. And so basically for me, at the end of the act one, he hated me. Like, I got the achievement, like, leave Act 1 in the abbot's, not in the abbot's good graces, I think is like what the achievement text was. And so I got, when I started Act 2, this other monk who basically didn't like me in the first act, one of the younger ones, was basically like, came up to my character and said, hey, the abbot wants you to come by in the morning because he wants you to look in his book, like the library's books, some of them are for sale. And essentially it was like, he wants to bury the hatchet. Like, he wants to put all this behind him, even though like earlier someone was like, oh, it's only been 7 years. That's not long enough. So I don't really know what's happening with that.
The reason I'm on the other side of the fence and why I didn't maybe enjoy it as much as you, and I think your description of me is right in that I'm lukewarm and why I probably won't finish the game, is, well, one, the thing about not having, I don't mind reading my games. Like, I don't have to have voice acting, but there was some dialogue where I found myself not caring and not wanting to read it. And I'm not sure if it's because I wasn't invested or what, but the problem I have with this style of game, and why, while I don't think it's a bad game, I think it's probably a good game based on the feedback I see around the internet, I think it's a game that's not for me. And I kind of have the same feeling when I play this game that I have playing the Telltale games or other games where most of the game is kind of just walking around, either finding clues or picking dialogue options, to where there's no actual puzzles or combat or some other gameplay mechanic.
There's small, kind of low key, very easy to solve puzzles. There are some, you just haven't gotten to them yet.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of introduced that at the very beginning with the, when you're in the monastery and the lady at the library of book borrowing wants you to return some books. And so she gives you like little hints and you have to go and find those books and return them.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's almost, some of it is almost like a roguelite, or not a roguelite, like a Metroidvania, in that you have to like do things to unlock areas and then you can get further based off of how you proceed down those different areas. I guess it's not really Metroidvania, but like it's kind of similar in that regard.
Well, it's a similar concept, but not a Metroidvania, because it's not like a,
there's no completely loot, per se, or like you don't like need like an ability or key.
Yeah, it's not like upgrades
to go back type of a thing.
It is interesting that it seems like the web of possibilities in this game is much deeper than other games that have choice as a mechanic. Like this game truly is only about the choices.
So like the guy that I picked, like accused, that got executed, like I didn't finish investigating his path, I guess, if you will, but I got pretty far. Like it was when I got down the furthest. So I was like, well,
might as well kill the guy.
It seems like there's enough here, but if you look at the achievement, like the secret achievements, there's one for every single person that like you could potentially accuse. And this is kind of getting close to spoiler territory, but not really. On some of these people, some of these people that you interact with, and I'm pretty sure all the people that you can potentially accuse, at a certain point, they'll either give you a piece of paper that they're like, yeah, I just found this, like someone put it under my pillow, or like, yeah, I just found this like in my mailbox, I don't know what it means. And like all of these people, all of these pieces of paper all have the same similar handwriting, and one guy remarks like, yeah, I don't, this handwriting like is really like exquisite, like it's 1518, so not everybody can write, right? And so like, you know, when people can write because they have like specific handwriting, and earlier this character had remarked about how like, oh, your handwriting is great, like that you're an artist clearly. And so like this one guy is like, yeah, this handwriting is so like exquisite, like it had to be someone specific, you know, but I don't know who it could have been. And they all these little like slips of paper that all these characters are finding in random places have like similar messages, and it's like they're trying to get them all to go to the same spot. And so it's almost like at one point I was like, so did somebody orchestrate this murder? And so that, and how they did it was they got the victim to go to the spot, and then they got the guy that they know that hated this person to go to that spot. And then, you know, for some reason they were able to get him to get to be murdered. So I don't know. I wasn't able to unravel that thread either. Like I didn't have enough time. So it's cool. I mean, like the late Middle Ages, I mean, I guess it's more like the Renaissance. Like I dig the setting. You know, like the very, it's all, there's lots of like Catholic Church stuff in it, which is really cool to me. You talk about Martin Luther a lot, like that's like a big topic. Like it pisses some of the monks off for obvious reasons, because it's right before the Reformation happened. You can choose like background things for your character. So like I picked like that I'm like logical, and that I studied law in university, and that I studied in Italy, like spent time in Florence and Venice during university. And you can like pick different background stuff, and that like can then show up later in conversations. Like you can say certain things because it's almost like speech checks, like in other.
Yeah,
like,
games. I did get that because I chose, I think, a Catholic Church background or something.
Yeah, and all that stuff's pretty cool. To give just a little bit of flavoring, I would say, to the story. It doesn't do a ton, but it's just kind of a neat little,
you know what that reminded me of?
Aspect. Yeah, what?
The cyberpunk, the three
kind
life
of
paths.
But honestly, but yeah, actually,
it would
kind
pop
of
up like street kid, and you could
you
use the
choose,
street kid
yeah,
dialogue
you can
option.
Choose the street kid dialogue.
And then
exactly.
In Pentiment, I was like, I had a diocese background or whatever from the Catholic Church. So like when I had that option, it would show like a little cross with a little, you know,
right,
little emblem.
Yeah. That's, so that's kind of cool. I'm trying to think like one thing, and I turned this off and I meant to turn it back on just to see what it looked like. But I know there's like unique dialogue, like how the dialogue appears. So like if you're talking to a farmer, the dialogue appears very rudimentary, but then if you're talking to like the abbot or the I forget what the head
the text abbess, is like indicative of their place in life, and
exactly
how
like
their
it looks fancier, it looks nicer. And it and I don't know if it was a glitch, but there was a character who him and his wife work as like in a, with a printing press, like they I don't know what that's called. And so when they would talk, it was like the blocks, the old school blocks would like slam onto the page and then they'd pull back and you would see all of the script rather than when other characters it's written. And so you have to follow it and it appears like someone how it would when someone was writing. But with these guys, because they work with a printing press, it slams on this page.
That's
you
really
see
cool.
It all at one point.
That's really cool. I didn't see that, but I will say one thing that I want to complain about is I found it very annoying that the script writing sound is not, if it's going to be such a dominant mechanic that you hear the sound of them writing.
Yeah.
That was like nails on a chalkboard to me. Really? I wanted the ability to turn down just that, just the scribbling of the pen.
That.
And that's not an option because it's there's
it's
only like
the
four
core
toggles.
Of the game. Yeah.
And secondarily to that, because of the way they do the dialogue, so like everything's written. So like these bubbles are like one or two sentences and you hit A to progress to the next message. And usually there's multiple, like up to 10 or 15 bubbles that are going to pop up with multiple text before you get to the end of a conversation.
Just don't tap A too fast.
Yeah, that's my complaint. There's the button to like, there isn't a button to like in other games where instead of waiting for all the text to appear, like let me hit X or B to just make it all jump ahead so that I can just start reading
it. It does. It
just but zoom. A is also the button to select your text. So if you hit A, and you hit it too many times, you accidentally miss your dialogue option.
Tim.
Well, that's why I'm saying I wish the buttons were different. I wish like B was skip text scribble so that I could just read it all at my own pace. And then A or X was to select the dialogue option because I was reading faster than it would let me go. And I was annoyed by that. And I just wanted to jump ahead and select my option. And the fact that there's a ton of text and you can't progress at your own pace, I found slightly annoying. And the reason I dock it so hard is it's a 100% text-based game. And so this is the text version of the annoying Assassin's Creed missions from the early games where you have to follow someone, but they're not walking and they're not running. They're going that half speed in between. And so you keep speeding up and then slowing down, speeding up and slowing down because you have to match the pace of this AI character.
You know what I feel like? You know, I feel like that would be alleviated. And some of the other complaints that you have,
what
playing it on a handheld device, like playing it on like a
they did add bespoke touch controls for it on Xbox Cloud, so if you play it on Android it has like custom touch controls.
Well, I just mean like you could play, I feel like playing this on something like, you know, like a Switch or whatever device you have, not necessarily a cell phone, unless you have like, I mean a cell phone I guess would be fine. I'm just not a huge cell phone gamer just because my screen.
But why would that
small.
Alleviate the problems?
Just because you wouldn't necessarily, you could turn the dial or the sound off if you're just playing on your phone.
Well, and I mean, I think, guess I can mute my console too, but.
Well, true, but I just feel like it's your, I don't know, to me it's like you're a lot more likely to have the sound off if you're on your cell phone, just because like most people have the sound off on their phone. And I just think that like you're not as prone to like, you know, be tapping on a mobile game or a handheld game. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I just.
Yeah. And maybe I should have played with the dial. I was worried that if I turned down like the global volume or the there's one, I don't know if it was called ambient or something else, but I was worried that if I wouldn't just be turning down the scribble, I would also be turning down like the chickens and like all the other ambient stuff that
you can
makes
dogs,
the game feel so
that.
Alive.
You can pet dogs and cats.
And cats. Yeah. I was going to say and cats.
They have funny names. But yeah, I mean, I really like this game. It's super cool.
So I just spoiled the whole game for myself. So now I know the ending.
How'd you do that?
I Googled it. I wanted to know who
that?
I wanted to know what the ending is because I'm not going to finish it. So
well,
I wanted to know.
Well, don't say anything because I'll be mad if you spoil it.
No, I'm not going to ruin it for you. I'm actually,
I am invested. I want to know. I love the murder mystery of it. The setting is cool. I also like stories where like something happens and then like there's a time jump. I love when there's a time jump. Like when I saw Endgame and it was like 5 years
cause and
later,
effect.
I was like, oh dang, that's, and then like everybody in the theater is just like, oh my gosh, I love that type of thing. And I the, like, the art style is awesome. All of the old book art style stuff, super cool.
The attention to detail and stuff is very high. For how low, like, I think the team on this game is less than 20 people, I think. It's, you'd look at it and you would look at it and initially be like, oh, this is an indie game, which in a way, like, we think of 2D, like, low poly or like special art style games as indie games. But no, this comes from a big first party studio.
Obsidian. Good old Obsidian.
That, because of Game Pass, let somebody in their team with an idea splinter off with a couple dozen people and make this bespoke, like, crazy idea of a project.
Yeah, I mean, if you have Game Pass, I think you should definitely try it. If you don't, I mean, and I don't know, I honestly don't even know how much it costs. I don't necessarily know if I could recommend it. Look it up on YouTube. Honestly,
I'm looking up to see how much it is, actually.
Yeah,
I don't know.
If you have Game Pass, download it and play it. Try it. If you don't have Game Pass, look it up on YouTube just to make sure.
Because, $20.
Yeah, because, I mean, $20. I mean, it's, you said, Tim, I think you said it's like a 20-hour game, which there's replay value. I think it's
16 to 20 is how much people were saying on how long to beat.
I believe that. And there's obviously replay value because you can accuse six different people of the murder for different reasons. So, and there's achievements that you literally cannot get because you don't have enough time to do the activity. So all of them. So yeah, if you have Game Pass, please play this game. It's cool. I love it a lot. It's probably my gun to my head, off the top of my head, where I have no knowledge of what was new this year. It's probably my favorite game this year.
Yeah. I liked Elden Ring, but it's not my genre, so it's not going to be my game of the year. Yeah. And I haven't played Plague Tale's God cool. of
War. I've been playing, I didn't play that this week, but it's cool, but this game is a lot, I think this game is just better to me.
It's also just unique, which makes it stand out.
True.
I haven't played God of War Ragnarok or finished Plague Tale yet, so I don't know if those would be on my list. Right now, of the games that I've played, Horizon Forbidden West is my favorite game of the year, which, obviously PlayStation, but...
Yeah, so Pentiment, I dig it. Tim doesn't.
Okay.
I think we're a microcosm of the community on this, I would say.
Yeah, and I acknowledge that it has high production values and cool art and good humor and good writing. It's just the heavy text-based narrative kind of game style is just not a genre that I think that I enjoy.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's anything that could change that. Like, I think the only thing that would make this maybe a palatable genre for me, or not palatable, but like something that I would sink more time into, is if it was in a genre that's more like, this speaks to Spencer. I'm more of a time travel or sci-fi or comic book, but even then, like, sometimes that stuff really goes off the rails when people take a indie like thing like this and try and make a sci-fi game. So I just think it's not for me, but I liked it for what it was, and I think I'm actually just really happy that you're enjoying it, because one, it means we can talk about it on the show, and two, I mean, I don't think they expect this to sell millions of copies, right? Like, but it did get pretty dang good reviews. I think it was hovering in the high 80s on Metacritic. Do you know what the Metacritic was? I'm gonna actually look it up because I'm curious.
Yeah, I wanted to say that just the only other thing that I played this week that was interesting was I played the 40th anniversary stuff on Flight Simulator, which I think was technically a couple weeks ago. And there's a ton of new planes that are free, like, included, like the Wright Flyer, the Spirit of St. Louis, the Spruce Goose.
Oh, yeah.
Super
gliders.
Cool.
A lot of gliders
helicopters, the DC-3. I mean, there's a ton of like really neat new game or planes you can fly. Like, I flew the DC-3, which is the C-47 from World War II that the US military used for the paratroopers. I flew around in the Spruce Goose, but it was kind of stupid because it's just like, it didn't feel,
I thought
felt
all
like
those
a mod.
I thought the Spruce Goose and all those were going to be paid. Did they switch it at some point? Because remember, the Legends series used to be paid.
Yeah, Pentiment has an 85 on Metacritic.
I saw that. I just didn't want to interrupt you.
That's okay. I thought so too, because like they're all historic planes, but the other stuff, like I remember the JU-52 that we talked about, that was like the first one. That's not on there. Plus flying the F-18 from the Top Gun update is always fun. I did that for like 15 minutes. I actually finally figured out how to like fix my heads up display. So I had all my gauges right. And, I turned on realistic fuel. And so I went out in the F-18 and just turned on the afterburners and like burned my fuel up in like 2 minutes. It was pretty cool. It was cool because like one engine failed and then the other engine failed. Like it was really cool.
So I also experimented with the Flight Sim update, and it took forever to do all the updates to the game that I had to do because I had to update the game client, update the game, and then while I was at it, I was like, I might as well update all these existing add-ons. I had downloaded all had updates. So that was 26 items that needed updated, and then there was the new Canada world update, and I was like, well, I'm already here. I might as well do that. And I just left my Xbox run for like 6 hours downloading. At the end of it, it was 260 gigs. And I think
I must not have 60, downloaded the Canada thing. I don't think I have that downloaded.
Well, and 60 or 80 of it was like reserve space, which you can go and clear, and then it won't fill back up that reserve until you launch the game, which is for like all the stuff it, you know, streams in for all the world data. But that game is so huge that I have to move it to an external drive when I'm not playing the game, because otherwise it takes up like it's almost the size of my Series S, which is just nuts. But anyway, I was going to say I did a helicopter and I took off from somewhere in downtown New York. And by default, the air simulation is turned on. Either that or my game somehow got it accidentally turned on to where you can see like little lines showing you where the air is around the helicopter, like what the blades are doing to the turbulent air. And they're like blue. So like there's this like whirlwind of air encompassing my helicopter as I take off. Once I flew around for a little bit, I turned it off because I don't really need to see the air simulation.
Yeah, I got in a helicopter, flew straight up, and then like lost control and immediately crashed.
Did you realize with the helicopter that if you hit up on the D-pad, it jumps you up like 1,000 feet or something, and you can like basically just teleport straight up for some reason?
No.
I think it's a ease of use feature, maybe because I have it on easy mode or something.
Huh.
But
interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. So let's talk about some other new stuff this week, and we can maybe get Gus in on this conversation a little bit. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. So Warzone Season 2.0, or no, I'm sorry, Warzone 2.0 Season 1 launched this last week, as well as Modern Warfare 2 Season 1. So I jumped in the day after launch with some friends, and we tried to play Warzone 2. It was horrible. We were rubber banding all over the place. We were like teleporting. We couldn't shoot people because they were disappearing and teleporting. The servers were completely hammered. And that was the second day. So also, I have my Call of Duty set to the 120 FPS mode on Xbox Series X. And I thought Warzone graphics looked terrible on the 120 FPS. I'm assuming because they turned out all the graphics to hit that high frame rate. So I ended up turning that off, but I didn't actually end up going back into the game because the servers were so messed up on the second day that we just played multiplayer instead. So it does seem like the runaway success of this game has overwhelmed the servers to some extent. And the menus and the matchmaking are so broken. Like the lobby and the menus, both from a design perspective and functional perspective, this is the worst I've experienced in a Call of Duty game in like maybe in the last 10 years. Like, I know there's always problems with online games at launch, but this is really bad. We're talking like none of the characters rendering correctly in the menu, friends disappearing, your friends list not rendering correctly, not being able to party up, not being able to search for a match for some reason, not being able to edit, create a class when your friend is trying to do things in the menu, plus just general UI problems with everything being so confusing about where things are and what's up, what's right, what's down. I already complained about that last week. I know they'll get this fixed over the weeks and months, but this is the best-selling Call of Duty going back to Black Ops 2, and this is the state it launched in. Like, this is the problem with annualized games that can never be delayed because they have to hit their dates, that this kind of stuff can happen. And the game is generally pretty good. Like the gameplay, when you're playing the game and it works, I enjoy. But the lobby, the menus, all that stuff, absolutely horrendous. And I hope it gets changed, but I have a fear that I don't think they're going to redesign the entire UI for this game when they're probably planning on a big DLC for next year or the next game next year. So, Gus, have you played any more Modern Warfare 2 since we talked last week?
No, I have not really had a chance to touch it. My problem is, like, I only have a limited amount of time to play at the end of every night.
Yeah, and two jobs will do that to you.
Yeah, and then, I mean, there's stuff out that I want to watch, and there's other games that I'm playing, and I'm not good at it, so like it's like hard for me to get back into it right now.
Oh, I did also start the campaign. I don't remember if I had said that last week. I don't think I had. So I've done
the campaign
like
is getting absolutely memed. Like,
so I think I've done
like
three or
Ghost.
Four missions, and so far I am not impressed with this campaign, which is weird because I was one of the.
I mean, I didn't think it was
Vanguard
that great either. I mean, I thought the first game was better.
Some of the missions, I'm like, was that the whole mission? It felt like it was over in like 5 minutes. And maybe it's like multiple settings in one mission, because I don't know when a mission starts and ends. But like the second or third levels, that underwater like stealth mission, which would have been really cool. But like once I got to land, I was like, oh, okay, so now I'm going to like infiltrate a building or something. And like it's like, no, you clear a boat and it's over. And I was like, was that a whole level? Because that was like 5 minutes. And I kind of felt that way about the next one or the one after that too. But I haven't gotten all the way through yet, so I'll have a final.
The one where you're in I think it's the Netherlands and Amsterdam was hard for me.
There wasn't a lot of cover on the streets, so I definitely died the first two times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I did too. I died a few times, like starting out. I'm just like, what do I need to be doing?
Digital Foundry had someone go and shoot that exact location with an iPhone or a phone and send them the footage, and then they matched it up with the game and put them side by side, and it's really cool. Go check that out on Digital Foundry's YouTube if anyone wants to. So all of my complaints about Call of Duty are stuff about menus, though, because the gameplay I really like. The attachment system is still kind of trashed, so I don't put a lot of attachments on my guns, but the new perk system seems to work pretty well. The battle pass is kind of cool. You can pick your own path on the battle pass. The UI is a little overly complex, but like now it's not linear like most other games. And this is what Fortnite has gone to with their battle pass. I don't know how many seasons ago they went to this, because I don't play Fortnite much, but you now basically can pick and choose what you want to spend your points on and how you get through the battle pass. So if you don't care about like an emblem, you don't have to waste your points on that. And I, for some reason, had a bunch of points, and I'm not sure if it's because of the version of the game I have or if it's because I carried them forward from a previous game or what, but I had 50 Battle Pass points. So maybe that's for like a boost. I don't know. I have the Vault edition of the game, but I don't know if that came with that. Spencer, when you play it, you'll have to tell me what your version had. Yeah, so Gus, it says, I know you and I have also been playing more Snap. We've talked about that the last 2 weeks, so I don't want to talk about it too much since it's not a Xbox game. But I will say I'm in Pool 3 now, which is like the end game, like because that's the highest pool. All the highest tier cards are in there, so now I'm matching against people that are like high tier. But what else did you play this week? Spencer and I have been talking a bunch, so you take the floor.
Yeah, so the biggest thing for me was Smite got an update, and they changed. So I only ever played Joust, first of all, which is like the 3v3 mode. It's much more simple to me, more fast-paced. I don't like playing Conquest games that can go on for up to like 45 minutes or longer. Mm-hmm. Yep. I simply do not have the time for that. So I play the Joust game, which can last anywhere from like 10 to like a half hour if it's like really getting nutty. But Smite released a RuneScape update, which is a game that Spencer and I have fond memories of playing in our youth. And it's actually like a pretty like in-depth crossover. So what it is they have five different gods and they introduce five different skins. I went ahead and bought one of them. It was the Wise Old Man, also known as Dionysus, also known as the Quest Cape guy in RuneScape, and he's a skin for Merlin. And so I bought that, and it's actually really interesting. So each skin comes with a cape that is applied to the skin, and you can do different, there's different challenges that you can complete to get the RuneScape skill capes as an aesthetic option for your character. So it's like, if I travel like it's like 5 million in-game units, I get the agility cape. Or if I play a guardian in 99 games, I get the defense cape. And then it has a second tier as well, which is like the trimmed cape, the trimmed skill capes, which if you're familiar with RuneScape when you play it, if you're not, when you get your second 99 skill, which is how you get a skill cape to begin with, your second 99 skill at that point will now all of your skill capes will be trimmed, which means that they'll have a secondary color along the outside of it, which I just think it's a cool little thing that they added to it, that they have all these other little side quests, I guess, that you can do to get different capes. I just thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I texted you when I saw the announcement of the RuneScape update, and you responded and said, "Yeah, Tim, I already got the skin yesterday. I'm already on top of this." I was like, yeah. I should have known.
Yeah,
Smite plus RuneScape speaks to Gus.
Yes, oh, it very much does. Like the update,
it's like me with Superman, and
I want to say it was like Thursday night or Friday. I feel like it was Thursday night. It was a Thursday night because I just got home from school, and it was updating. And then I played it and I saw that was a thing. And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? Because they have other crossovers, and that, like, Avatar has a crossover. Transformers has a crossover. And I want to say there's one other one. But I don't know. It's just like a cool little thing that they added. And I mean, obviously, like you said, it speaks to me because somebody who played RuneScape.
Yeah.
I just think that all the little side quests that you can do are really cool, really fun. And it's just another thing that keeps me playing the game. I don't know. Some people talk smack about Smite. I really don't care. It's just I'm good at it, so that's why I play it a lot. Like, or it's not, maybe not good, but I'm like decent at it, I would like to say.
Hey, and don't, people can talk smack about anything. Yeah. If you enjoy it, don't let anybody tell you what you enjoy.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a MOBA, so that also people are like, MOBAs.
That is a genre. That's another one that doesn't speak to me.
Yeah, I mean, but I played League of Legends in high school. Like, when I was in high school, I played League. I played that for like a few years in a row. Spent way too much money on skins, and I really wish I could have that money back. Now that I don't play it anymore.
How do you feel about your World of Tanks cosmetic?
Don't even get me started.
Yeah,
it's bad. Bad, bad, bad.
Okay, well, let's move on to some news. We're kicking it off with Phil Spencer's interview with Decoder, which is the podcast for, it's not Windows Central. It's, why can't I think of it? Spencer, you know who it is, right? It's The Verge. That's what it is. I had to click around to remind myself. Okay, so three pieces of news came out of this this podcast interview, which I recommend listening to. I listened to the whole thing. It's a good listen. Phil Spencer's a charismatic guy. So first, he said Starfield's delay was that they felt good about it, and it basically was because they've shipped games too early before, and they realized that they've been doing that and that they've made that mistake multiple times. And I think you can look at Crackdown, Halo Infinite, I don't know what else comes to mind, but basically the only game that really has come out kind of flawless has been the Forza games, with a lot of the first party having trouble over the last few years. So, I mean, Fallout 76, if you want to expand it to Bethesda, Wolfenstein Youngblood, just a lot of games that maybe came out too soon or had issues at launch. The second piece of thing that he said, I'm not going to call it news, but he said that the Keystone streaming box or stick was scrapped. This is the box that was on his shelf that everybody made a big deal about. We talked about it on the show a few weeks ago because it was too expensive. So they took a team inside Xbox, and they had 9 months to make the box using parts that they already had. So they basically, you know, made it from parts of other products to see what they could do. And it basically was just too expensive. And they were trying to get around $100 to $130 because they need it to be priced low enough that you're not just like, well, why don't I just get a Series S? Like, that's $250, $300. If this is $200 for a streaming box, that's not much of a savings for a huge loss in the ability to play games, you know, streaming versus streaming and native on the Series S. So he said that they still will probably do it at some point in the future. They've just basically shelved it for now until the technology gets cheaper or they have a better solution. And I'm going to just throw out the third thing he said that was interesting, and then we can pause and you guys can react to whatever you want to talk about, which is he said, basically the interviewer asked him, are you willing to make a long-term commitment to put Call of Duty on PlayStation? Because that's where they're throwing a fit about this merger. And Phil Spencer said no lawyer is going to let him sign something with forever written in it, but their plan is to always ship Call of Duty on a PlayStation platform as long as there is a PlayStation platform to ship to, and he wants to add shipping to Nintendo and anywhere else that he can, because that's how they're going to make money. And he said, the interview said this and he agreed, which is, this is not about Call of Duty, this is about mobile. Xbox has no foothold in mobile. It's the biggest place gaming is growing. All the gay revenue growth in gaming has come from mobile, and they have Call of Duty Mobile, Diablo Immortal, and the everything from King and Candy Crush, and that all makes more revenue. Even actually just King makes more revenue than Activision, and so that's what this deal is about. And so whatever concessions basically they need to make on the Call of Duty side to get the deal to go through is probably worth it for Xbox, because they need the mobile business to grow in other markets where mobile is dominant. And it, I mean, not that it's not in the US, it's just some other markets it's more dominant than it is here. I'm going to pause there. Spencer, Gus, any of that stuff jump out at you that you want to react to? I bet specifically the Starfield stuff you guys both have an opinion on.
I thought I did listen to it partially because I wanted to hear the part where Phil Spencer reacts to a comment by the host about PlayStation like being the one who is being problematic. And he's like, well, I didn't say who. He's like, but I didn't hear Nintendo being making any comments about it, and then they both laughed, and I was like,
"Yeah, Savage Phil Spencer is my favorite Phil Spencer." Yeah, he's like, I forget the quote, but it's something to the effect of, "I didn't hear anything about Nintendo filing any complaints." Like, he didn't say Nintendo didn't file any. He said, "I didn't hear anything about Nintendo filing complaints."
Because the guy's like, "It's like you mean PlayStation," or he's like, "You mean Sony?" He's like, "Well," he's like, "I mean, I didn't say Sony, but I don't hear Nintendo make filing any complaints." And I thought that was really funny. I was like, really zinged him with that one, Phil.
I'm sure that Philly Spence. I'm sure his PR person behind the mic was like, ooh. But I liked it. I thought it was funny.
I mean, come on. People, I don't know. The thing is, people kind of like that. I don't know. People like it, like having a little bit of spice to your character about it. Yeah. I mean, come on. Like PlayStation, like Sony has been very problematic about it. Like,
I don't know.
And that's like well known.
Honestly, I want Call of Duty to stay on PlayStation because I want to be able to play with my friends that don't have an Xbox.
Well, you can do that anyway with your Activision accounts.
No, I know, but if they made it exclusive, so like if they need it to make like, they're obviously not going to make Call of Duty exclusive.
No, yeah.
So I don't know why.
There's zero reason. And I don't know why Sony is like kicking up such a dust storm about it. It's like Microsoft stands to make way too much money. But I just think that Sony like doesn't like that power, like that, that Microsoft can hold. Like it's not about like that. It for them it's not about people being able to play Call of Duty on PlayStation. That is, I really don't think that's the root of the issue. I just don't think they don't like the market power that Microsoft holds by owning it.
Spencer, you've been unusually quiet. What do you think?
Well, I was just letting you guys talk about it. I mean, on the Call of Duty stuff, I don't have much to say other than I do find it interesting that Sony has raised such a big stink about this over the last, I mean, at this point, it's been several months. I can't think of a situation like this, like in the gaming industry between Microsoft and Sony. I mean, or between any competitors, I feel like since like the 90s, you know, like when, and I feel like Sony and Nintendo were going to war all the time. The whole thing is ridiculous to me because for two reasons. One, like you guys are just saying, like Microsoft would never take Call of Duty off of PlayStation because of the amount of money that they would lose. Like they would be making the Activision acquisition be in the red or whatever that accounting term is for decades. Like it would take them years to make that money back. And I understand that Candy Crush and the other mobile games are what's growing, and is what they've said is the primary reason for the acquisition. I get that, but that doesn't change the fact that Call of Duty is and has been the best-selling video game for a decade now, 15 years, every year. So, and that is only because it's on Xbox, PlayStation, and PC. It's not just on one of them. So I just think it was naive for anybody to really ever think that they would take Call of Duty off of Sony's platforms just because of that reason and that reason alone. And it's hilarious to me because in any other situation, if the shoe was on the other foot, Sony would not think twice about taking that game off of Xbox. Now, if they had somehow acquired Activision, they'd probably be in the same boat. They would be like, yeah, this is going to be on Xbox because we simply can't afford for it not to be.
I don't know that that's 100% true, though, because they bought Bungie, kept them independent, and they're still shipping Destiny on all platforms, and they're going to into the future. So
that's true.
Just to be a devil's advocate.
I mean, that's true. That's a good counterpoint. But I feel like Sony's track record, though, in that space is a lot more antagonistic. Clearly,
absolutely,
they're raising a big stink about this, even though Phil Spencer has said publicly for weeks that, no, we're not taking this off of off of their platform. And I don't know. The whole thing is just silly.
And we just found out Final Fantasy 16 is a minimum of six months exclusivity and wasn't one of the Resident Evil games exclusive as well. No, it was Silent Hill 2 remake.
Yeah.
Is a timed exclusive as well.
And another one is like the Final Fantasy 7 remake that originally they said it was coming to Xbox, and then they've just quietly abandoned that.
Yeah, so the rumor is that they re-upped the deal for another year of exclusivity because it's such a boon for that game.
Yeah, which makes no sense to me because, like, someone like me, I am, and maybe there's probably not a lot of people like me, I'll give you that, but someone like me who, number one, likes RPGs, number two, has never really played Japanese RPGs. I played a few, like, I've played a few in the 360 days, but someone like me, I would probably buy that game if it was on Xbox Series X to play it because it's interesting to me. It's very high quality. They've made it a little bit more user-friendly for people who are used to action RPGs or Western RPGs, but it's still very Japanese, and I'm never going to play it unless it comes to Xbox, which at this point, there's no sign that it ever will.
And it's so weird because didn't Final Fantasy 15 come to Xbox, but 16 isn't, and 7 remake didn't.
And so many of them have cycled in and out of Game Pass too. So there is a relationship there between Microsoft and who is that? Is that Bandai Namco? No, that doesn't sound right. I forget.
Square Enix.
Yeah, I think it's Square Enix. So I don't know. I mean, I'm over it. I mean, I'm not a huge Call of Duty fan anyway, so I don't really care either way, but I just feel like it's been so blown out of proportion, and I'm over the dialogue on it at this point. And then I guess
I do wish the deal would just be over. What about Starfield? That's the one I really
I'll say something on that. But I wanted to say one comment on the Keystone project being scrapped. That does interest me, just because I feel like because Microsoft doesn't have any experience in the handheld gaming space, that kind of handicapped them from the get-go. All of their development costs are going to be higher because they've never made a handheld gaming device. And I do wonder...
Keystone,
like,
isn't a handheld. Keystone is the streaming stick. It's the Chromecast.
Oh, I don't... For some reason, I don't know why I thought... Whatever. I mean, yeah. I do want them to make a handheld. I'd probably buy that. That'd be cool because I don't want to play on my phone. That's stupid. Playing games on your phone is stupid. No offense.
Yeah, well, and they kind of did it with partners with the LG Cloud and the other one. There's been a couple that came out recently for xCloud that are like handheld devices, like a Steam Deck or a Switch. But the problem is they're $250 to $300. And I'm not, for what is a glorified screen controller, that's way too expensive.
Yeah.
Way. And that may be the cost of manufacturing plus, you know, bringing to market. But like the price that I'm willing to pay for that is $100 to $200 maximum. And I know $100 is probably a little too cheap because it's basically a controller with a screen. But $250 to $300 is way too much.
Yeah, and I guess on the Starfield thing, I wonder if he's just talking about Halo. Because I can't, I mean...
I don't know. I can't really... Crackdown was a pretty Crackdown, rough launch, yeah. And that was a major first-party like thing that they teased for years. And yeah. You remember, I mean, it became
Gears
a joke.
Gears 5 was fine.
Which one?
Gears 5 was fine.
Oh, yep, that's a good point.
But I don't know. I mean, it's so hard.
It doesn't mean everything hasn't been delayed.
Well,
I'm
just saying, like, it's so hard because there have been so few first-party games for my entire life, it feels like, that I can't really think of what he could be talking about other than Halo of recent notoriety, at least. Because Forza, like you said, has been fine. Gears was fine. Crackdown 3, yes, that was pretty bad.
Grounded doesn't really count because it was in early access forever. And
Pentiment,
I mean,
has no problems.
Yeah, Minecraft Legends or not? Which one's Dungeons. The new one? Dungeons. Dungeons was fine, and it got a lot of content afterwards. So, like, that
yeah,
seemed to launch great.
I don't know.
I think the thing is, the biggest marquee stuff is Halo, and it launched poorly. And the winter update is getting rave reviews, and the Forge stuff seems to be blowing up, but. It was a year after launch, and that really hurt them. And they might be on the road to recovery, but they have to keep it coming. We're going really long in the tooth, though, so I'm going to move on. And oh, wait, Spencer, you wanted to say something about Starfield.
Oh, no, that was actually all I was going to say. I wonder if we'll see something at the Game Awards about a release date.
Cool. Maybe. That's a good point. Or, I think we're going to see a lot of stuff at the Game Awards more than usual. Not a lot, but more than usual because
there's so much delayed to the spring.
Yeah, and there are no known announced PlayStation games except for Spider-Man and Wolverine. So we know nothing about next year for PlayStation. And Xbox, we know the first two. We know Starfield and Redfall, but we really don't know anything about the rest of the year. Now, maybe they don't want to announce it this early, but the stuff for the beginning of the year like Redfall, I think it's more likely, Spencer, that we're going to get an announcement of a date for Redfall. And not Starfield, because I think Redfall is going to come first. But we'll also probably get at least one major announcement from PlayStation. But I always overestimate the Game Awards, and then we usually don't get anything. The biggest announcement is probably going to be that we're finally going to see something from Hideo Kojima, because he's been teasing for like months now the actors and actresses that are going to be in his next game. And it could be the one that's going to be on Xbox that Phil Spencer teased, was it last year's Game Awards when that was teased? Or it could be Death Stranding 2 or whatever is next for the PlayStation partnership. So I'm excited about that one. So number two, the Embracer Group. This is kind of a wrap up of Embracer Group updates from their earnings call. And I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to hit all four of them really quick, and then we can dive into whatever ones we want to talk about. The first one is that Crystal Dynamics is working with Xbox on Perfect Dark, as we know, and they gave an update that it's going extremely well. So, and I saw multiple reports summarizing this call and how they spoke about it, and it seems like generally Perfect Dark seems to be in very good shape, but we don't really know how far in the development process it is. So the second one is we got an update on Guardians of the Galaxy. It said it hit 8 million players. Now that's players, not sales, because remember it was on Game Pass and not at launch, but soon after, within like 6 to 8 months. And I think it eventually found its way to the new PlayStation Plus as well. So who knows how well it sold. And then they also gave a tease that we'll hear about the next Tomb Raider sometime in 2023. One that kind of made headlines being misreported was Volition, after the launch of Saints Row not being critically well received, is being moved into the Gearbox group. Of basically the way they report into the Embracer Group. They said that this was because it's a US-based organization and it'll streamline like basically the reporting structure and stuff. And it didn't really seem like a big deal to me, but a bunch of people seemed to be misreporting it, that it was like Volition was being shut down and folded into Gearbox, which does not appear to be the case. And then the last one is Dead Island 2 was delayed again. And this time it's delayed another 3 months to April 28th, 2023, just to make the game better. I mean, not really a great excuse, except for that they need more time. So let's talk about these. The most interesting one, I think, being Volition. But Spencer, what do you want to hear?
I was laughing at Dead Island 2 because it, like,
the game that won't die.
Yeah, it's like the Duke Nukem, that Duke Nukem game that was delayed for 20 years and then finally came out and was garbage. That's what Dead Island 2 feels like.
What game just passed that Ubisoft game, Beyond Good and Evil 2, just passed Duke Nukem Forever as the game announced to release the longest distance apart.
Yeah.
And then this game was announced at the Game Awards 2016, I think, or 2017.
Yeah, but like because I feel like it was a rumor for years before that, because the
Dead Island 2?
Dead Island 1 came out in like, what, 2010?
Yeah, I'm looking when the actual official announcement was, though. Because
I just feel like Dead Island 2 is a game that people have been talking about for 8 years.
Yeah, and to be honest, I just feel like the zeitgeist is gone on that game. I just don't think it's going to sell well enough to justify how many developers and delays it's gone through.
Yeah.
The zombie genre in general has kind of died off to some extent.
Yeah. On the other stuff, though, I really want to know about Tomb Raider. I feel like we were supposed to learn something this year because it was the 20th anniversary or the 25th anniversary, and we didn't learn anything.
No, it was all like nothing really happened.
Yeah, but am I crazy? Did they not say like last year or earlier at the beginning of this year, they were like, oh, we're excited for the 25th anniversary. Stay tuned for more.
I mean, it might have been more implied than explicitly stated.
Yeah,
but remember they announced like a documentary about Tomb Raider and the cookbook.
I don't know.
I mean, it's kind of good that Tomb Raider has gone away for a little while, so we have time to miss it, you know, like rather than pumping games in. What?
I think I miss it. What, has it been 4 years since we got one? Was 2018 the last one? So I miss it.
Yeah, and I think they got better and better. I mean, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, I really enjoyed, even though it was kind of different from Rise, and Rise was different from Tomb Raider.
I think Rise was the best of the three, if I'm being honest.
That might be true. Shadow had a couple of things that were different. It was a different developer.
Yeah.
But
I don't necessarily need my Tomb Raider to be open world, though, which I feel like they got more and more as it progressed. So I didn't like that as much in Shadow. But it was still good. Yes, I still liked it. I just, I think the first one had the best story because it was the mystery and the setup and kind of a cliffhanger ending. But I think the second one is my favorite, though, of those.
It's going to be interesting, though, because remember, the next game is going to bridge this trilogy to the original games.
Which I still don't understand how they do that, but okay.
Yeah, especially
without
since
time travel or like some sort of like a wormhole, which Tomb Raider's had some weird stuff in it, so okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, honestly, at this point, just remake the first game in a modern art style with use the bare bones of the story and make it into a fully fleshed out thing. That's what everybody's doing now.
You don't like the triangle boobs from the first one?
Oh, by the way, we don't have this in the news, but there was I believe, 20th anniversary celebration for Splinter Cell this week, and they showed some concept art for the new game, and it is a full-on remake. They're not,
I did not see
remastering.
That.
It's a full-on remake, but I did put it in the news because concept art isn't really something to go off of. That's not what the final game is going to look like. The fact that the game's being worked on, we already know. So anyway.
Yeah.
Volition moving to Gearbox. I do want to point out that there was an update for Saints Row this week that had 200 fixes in it, and the patch notes for it were robust. So hopefully that game's headed in a good direction to where when we buy it on sale in the future, during a slower time,
Black Friday.
It's on sale for Black Friday, but hang on, only the $100 edition.
Already?
Now it's a good savings. It's $67 for the $100 edition, but the $60 version is not on sale.
On like your Xbox, like if you go to the Xbox store,
yeah, the digital Xbox store, the $100 edition with the expansion pass is on sale for $67.99.
Looks like I need to Google Black Friday 2022 mega sale thread so I can see where it's on sale.
But you get what I'm saying? You would still be paying the full price for the game, just also getting
the
expansion pass.
I don't want that.
Exactly. So that's why
I hold off. It's not good.
Well, it doesn't exist yet. It's just announced. So
yeah. I need that game to go on actual sale. Yeah, I feel like you learned that the hard way with Gotham Knights.
No, I said prepaying for DLC.
Oh.
And I learned the hard way with Far Cry. Which six? Far Cry game was it?
Any of them? There's never been good Far Cry DLC.
Far Cry 5. And Far Cry 5 DLC broke me. That's the game that I was like, why do I buy these editions with DLC included?
I will die on that hill that Far Cry has never had good DLC ever. There's never been good Far Cry DLC or DLC that ever inspired me to pay for it for Far Cry.
Was Blood Dragon technically DLC?
No, I don't know that.
Okay.
But even then, Blood Dragon is like the only one that's even remotely close, and I don't think you have to play Blood Dragon.
No.
So it's fascinating to me because Ubisoft for the Assassin's Creed has had a lot of good DLC, but with their other big tentpole Far Cry, there's not been a single piece of DLC.
Hang on though, because I do want to point out that Watch Dogs, Far Cry, and Assassin's Creed, all their DLC is the same thing. They take all the mechanics from the base game and they just do it again and they add a little bit of a twist. And the only reason we like the Assassin's Creed stuff better is because they usually put a fun, mythological spin or something, or a story hook, versus the Far Cry stuff is more bland because it's a more realistic world. And then Watch Dogs DLC is generally terrible too. So I don't know. I
will say that
Ubisoft just sucks at DLC.
They lost me with Valhalla, but that was also more because I was just burned out on the gameplay after three games, after, 400 hours of the same kind of gameplay. I kind of burned myself out on it.
Hey, speaking of another thing that I didn't put in the show notes, December 4th, 5th, or 6th, somewhere in the next first week of December, they're doing the final update to Valhalla. It'll be the last update. They're adding the final chapter mission for Eivor, and then there will be no more updates for the game. And they
never
said
installing that game again.
Eivor.
Because they're not doing New Game Plus. Because of the way the game is and how they have like the mode where you can do the river raids and all kinds of stuff that's continual, that it would like mess up all that and they couldn't make it work in a reasonable fashion. It wasn't worth it. So they're not doing New Game Plus, which it's been out for 2 years. I don't think at this point they were ever going to add it, but
yeah. And I'm not going to say anything about that.
I'm burnt out on it too. And Assassin's Creed is like, it used to be my top three franchises and I've only played, I don't know, 20 hours of Valhalla, and I just can't get myself motivated to go back to it. Vikings sounded so fun, but some of the changes they made to the game just made it really grindy.
After I lost like 5 hours of progress, which I know only 5 hours, but after that happened because my save got corrupted, I was just like, nope, that's it.
Gus, did you finish the story, Spencer?
Yes, I did.
Okay, Gus.
Yeah, I don't know. It was... obviously, I don't want to rag on it too much because I actually enjoyed a lot of it. I don't genuinely think it was a bad game. I thought the mythological stuff was pretty cool, albeit not as cool as Odyssey. I thought they could have done a lot better job with the mythological stuff than they did. But that's just me personally. But I mean, I thought like the stuff like Gungnir, like Mjolnir, Excalibur, like I thought those were all like cool little touches.
Yeah.
And I liked cool like the I liked the dual wielding, like dual wielding Gungnir and Mjolnir was like sick to me. I thought Thor's armor was stupid. And I thought there was a lot of poor design decisions to made personally.
I have a question.
But what's up?
I'm sorry to interrupt you guys. How did we get here? I know that I started talking about DLC and how Assassin's Creed sucks at it, or how Ubisoft sucks at DLC.
Because Multiform is the Assassin's Creed podcast.
Yes,
but why were we even talking about DLC? I'm looking at this Embracer Group stuff we were talking about. It's like, I don't even know how I got here. I don't know how I got here,
and now I'm talking about it.
And now you're ranting about Assassin's Creed.
I'm not. I never had good DLC. That's right.
But why were we talking about Far Cry at all?
Because you were talking about how you learned to not pre-order for DLC.
Oh, because Saints Row's on sale, the DLC. Right. Okay, yep. Back to Volition. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, I wasn't ragging listeners on them. Like I said, I'm not gonna rag on them too much because, like I said, I thought the game was cool. Like I really did think it was cool and it was interesting. I thought the story was interesting enough.
But I think I would like it if I had more free time to sink 300 hours into.
I'm over the RPG elements in Assassin's Creed.
And well, good, because the next one doesn't have them.
Thank God.
I'm excited for that one too.
Yes, me too. But the thing is, it's like I said, I thought there were like some poor design decisions. And like I said, I'm not going to say they like looked bad, but it's like a Thor's armor. It's like supposed to be like, I mean, it's Thor.
It looks like the old school Marvel Thor armor. But the little wings.
No, I mean, not quite. Like the, I don't know. It just didn't look like, I don't know. It's like.
Well,
like,
you know why. Having, you like, know why. Hold on.
What? Go.
All of the armor that you can get for free in the game looks the same. All the cool stuff you have to pay real world money for.
Well, yes, that is, and a you are indeed correct about that. And I fell victim to that with Origins because they have a cool Pharaoh armor that is absolutely sick, nasty. So I paid for that.
Okay, let's shelve the Assassin's Creed conversation because they're going to announce more stuff about the next game soon enough, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about it then. Plus, we have three more stories to get through, and I want to talk about them, and then a couple of quick hits that I'm very excited about. So first, number three, Black Friday holiday sales for Xbox. So this actually is, we were just talking about sales, which should have just transitioned to this. So the Xbox Series S is going to be $249 for the holidays, so $50 off. This is a baller move by Xbox to cut $50 off the Series S when the PS5 and the Series X are still hard to find. A lot of families going to be buying $250 Xbox consoles for their kids. So that's a great move. More interestingly, this happens every year, but Xbox controllers are on sale. 30% off. So black, white, and red are $40. Green and blue were $45. And all the other designs like the mineral camo, lunar shift, all those are usually $49.99. Or not usually, are on sale. So you can get an Xbox controller for $40. And I saw the PS5 controllers are on sale for $50. So always the best time of year to buy a new controller if you need one, because they're always cheapest now. And then, of course, the digital sale that Spencer and I were talking about. The Black Friday sale is live on the Xbox Store. If you want to buy a digital game, it's probably on sale. And if it isn't, well, don't buy it, because you got the end of the year sale coming soon enough around Christmas, which is what Spencer and I keep our wish list updated for.
I need
for.
Saints Row at $30.
It's so like petty of us to like do that, but... But when you deliver a game that doesn't review super well and there's other games vying for your time, it's like, well, I can wait anyway. So why should I pay full price just to have it on my hard drive? Because just, I just see you guys in our text chat just scrolling. Like, it's just going by so fast that I can't even read it while I'm talking.
We're having two conversations here. Well, for
poor
me,
listeners.
For me, it's like...
The listeners don't care about this.
I know.
I don't know.
It's Hearts of Iron related.
I just don't want to pay $35 or more dollars for Saints Row. Does that make me a bad person? I don't think so. I think that makes me a practical
person. Your
money,
you get to make your decisions about your money.
Yeah. It's your money. Use it when you need it.
Okay. So let's talk about Game Pass. Announcements for the rest of November. Lappin? November 17th, Norco, November 17th, Gungrave Gore, November 22nd, which we talked about last week, but it's now officially on the back half. We love the name of that game, or we don't, depending on how you view it. Listen to old episodes if you want to hear about that. I think 2 weeks ago we bashed on that game. Not the game, the name of the game.
We've talked about it multiple times on the pod. Like, we've talked about it. This is the third or fourth time we've talked about it.
The name makes no sense.
I have to look it up every time.
Battlefield 2042, finally coming to Game Pass, November 22nd, also coming to EA Play. It's only Game Pass Ultimate. This is great because it's the update where they're adding the classes back in, but it's bad because I hear this game doesn't have a population at all. But I'm going to check it out. And then Insurgency Sandstorm, November 29th, and Soccer Story, November 29th. Now, leaving November 30th, we have Arkvale, Deer Simulator, Final Fantasy 13-2, Mind Scanners, Mortal Shell, Space World, Organ Trading Simulator. There it is, Spencer. Or, I mean, Gus. Remember when I told you about Organ Trading Simulator and I told you it was only on PC? Yes. I was wrong. It's on cloud and you have till the end of the month to play it on Game Pass.
I need it.
Undungeon and Warhammer 40,000 Battle Sector. So I will say, of all those games leaving...
You said Warhammer 40,000?
I always say that. Everyone always hates when I do that, so I do it on purpose.
Henry Cavill's having an aneurysm right now. I know. And I will never get Warhammer to have him on 40K. The show, Tim, because of you. And yes, I will not forget that joke that I want Henry Cavill on the podcast.
Hey,
no, I won't forget
that,
it either.
That is indeed a deep cut for our listeners.
I've spent more time than I wish to admit trying to get a hold of his publicist.
One day.
I'm not even kidding.
Him on here.
One day.
Yeah, one day we'll be big enough.
He's done other small podcasts, by the way, like a gaming podcast. So, like, it wouldn't be unheard of.
I'm Hawkeye honestly, right now. Don't give me hope, Tim.
The problem is, he's more of a PC gamer.
The only way Henry Cavill comes on this show is if both Tim and Gus start and beat The Witcher 3 on Xbox. It's the only way.
All right, well, I'll do it.
It's in the news today, so we're going to talk about it in a minute.
If we tweet this episode to him and tell him to listen at the end and talk about this, if he says yes, I will be beating The Witcher before the end of 2022.
And I will beat all the DLC.
Yes.
I didn't say that. I will
buy it.
I know it is.
Buy it all. I'm excited for full price.
We're going to talk about it in a minute.
For the quick hit that we're going to get to. But I wanted to say
two
things. Insurgency Sandstorm, Gus, didn't your roommate Josh play that game? And he wanted you
yes,
to play
he
it.
Still plays it.
Okay.
He wants me to. He's still. I'm pretty sure he still wants me to buy it.
Well, now you don't have to because it's coming to Game Pass.
I'm gonna text him about that, actually.
Yeah, I'd be like, suck it. I don't have to pay for this. And second, I feel like that game was kind of like that 6 Days in Fallujah remake that they were trying to get off the ground, where it was like kind of like a weird, almost like AA-and-a-half first-person shooter, Middle East, terrorist, Iraq type of a game. That I feel like people were trying to hype it up earlier this year, but I feel like it never really took off. The other thing I wanted to say was, I feel like Deer Simulator with the extra E's, didn't that just came to Game Pass? Like that was barely on here for like two
Google
months.
It. Coming to Game Pass and Deer Simulator.
Well, it might have been an E3 edition. Maybe that's why I'm thinking of it.
Some games only get added for 6 months. That is true.
Yeah, I just feel like it was a short little turnaround. But
I'm looking up Insurgency Sandstorm's Metacritic just because I'm curious. It has a 78 on PS4. I mean, that's solid. It's green. Xbox One has a 82. So what kind of
gameplay
is
that? I think it's multiplayer only. That's the thing. Campaign. It's like it's just like one of those strictly multiplayer only FPSs.
FPS, lethal, close quarter combat. Multiplayer gameplay. Yeah, okay. And then Deer Simulators. I'm going to do it. Deer.
That's spelled right.
It auto-corrects. Simulator coming to Game Pass. We'll see when it was announced. They have... Oh, wow. The art for that game.
It's funny.
November 11th, 2021 there's a post on Game Rant that says Xbox Game Pass getting Deer Simulator game. So that was a year ago. So it must have been a 12-month thing. So we're just mixing our dates because we've been doing this podcast for so long.
All right, number five, the November update. Tim?
Yeah, so there's a lot of good stuff in this update, but this is kind of a boring thing to talk about on the podcast. But the biggest ones are you can now scroll through your Discord voice channels and join them on Xbox so you can talk cross voice with PC players. They also have noise suppression in Discord. This one I like is wishlist gifting sale notifications. So now your wishlist on Xbox, you'll get notifications on the console when items on your wishlist are on sale. So that's pretty cool. There's a new captures app. There's a new power options that tells you how much power your console uses in the different modes. You can now live stream natively from Twitch, Lightstream, and Streamlabs on your Xbox console. And this is the dumbest feature that they've added in a long while, but there's now recommendations in settings. So you'll go into your settings app and it'll like suggest settings that you should check out. It's like, I guess maybe if you're not a person that goes into settings very often, but like when I go to settings, I know what I want and where it is, or I use the search function. The search function, if you don't know on your Xbox console, searches everything. It'll search settings. So if you want dark mode, just hit search and type dark mode and it'll bring it up in settings. You don't have to go to the settings app and hunt and peck through the menus until you find something. But anyway, okay. So that's basically a quick hit. I don't think you guys have anything to add on that. Speak now if you do. Okay, quick hits. Here's the one I was telling Spencer not to spoil. The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt is getting its next gen, or current gen, as it should be called, update, and it arrives in December. So they kept their word. It's coming this year, December 14th. I'm super stoked on this. I cannot wait for 60 FPS, 4K, and hopefully also some like level of detail improvements or other things. Maybe even if we're lucky, ray tracing would be really cool. Mm. But I think that's lofty goal. But then again, they did have ray tracing on Cyberpunk, so who knows?
I'm excited. Oh, my!
Are you
going to
replay?
Or
are you just going to get back in?
Well, I have a. I'm not going to like totally replay it. I have a save that's like at a good spot that I'm probably just going to pick up from, honestly. But we'll see.
Yeah, I'm in a mid playthrough that I stopped when they announced this update, because remember I was playing it, I don't know, a year ago and talking about it on the podcast, and then I stopped again because they're like, oh, we're going to do an update, and I'm like, well, I'll just wait for that then. The other two quick hits are cloud gaming is now coming to 2021 model Samsung TVs, so you can stream Xbox Game Pass on 2021 select 2021 Samsung TVs over the next few weeks. It's currently on 2022 models, so whatever. And then finally, I'm curious what Gus and Spitzer will say about this one. The Taiwanese rating board has rated Company of Heroes 3 for console. So this game was supposed to come out in November, was delayed recently to February 23rd, 2023. There has never been an announced console version of this game. So this rating could mean that maybe the delay partially has something to do with a console version being announced for next year, maybe at the Game Awards. Who knows? This seems like a game right up your guys' alley, like a strategic, like World War II game, and Company of Heroes is well thought of franchise.
Yeah, Spencer and I have played both of them, and I'm going to say it, and I've said it before, RTS games on console are not fun.
Get out of here.
Sorry.
Yeah, Gus and I just can't do it. We played Company of Heroes 2 cooperatively back in the
day. On PC or console?
On PC.
PC. It's not been on
console. I didn't think it was on. Yeah, it wasn't on console.
I put it on my MacBook, and man, that thing was screaming.
Yeah, I did when too. I'd be playing MacBook Air.
Spencer and I would be man. I would have like 20 FPS at the max.
Think about it though. Like, we had Halo Wars 2, which I really liked, and then now we're getting all the Age of Empire, or at least two Age of Empires games on console, and then potentially Company of Heroes 3. Like, RTS on console is kind of coming back.
I guess, but I just it's just,
well, the difference with Halo Wars was like it was optimized for, like, it was built for console.
Yeah,
like when I tried playing, what was that game, like, what was that, 3 years ago?
Gears Tactics?
No,
that wasn't RTS.
Stellaris.
Well, Stellaris, yes, but I'm trying to think, 3 years ago, the World War II RTS I was playing.
Oh,
whatever, yeah, it was called. 3 years ago, that game, like, you could tell, like, okay, this would probably be better with a mouse and keyboard. And I kind of felt the same way with Crusader Kings 3 on Xbox. Like, it was cool, and they did a great job optimizing it, but it's just so much better on PC. Like, infinitely better. So, I don't know. It's cool. I mean, it's neat. I want to play this game because I'm more interested in the setting than the second game, but I don't know if that's going to be on Xbox. That remains to be seen.
Yeah. Well, and we'll probably get confirmation either early next year or maybe at the Game Awards. So I'm really excited about The Witcher 3, though, but there's so much to play right now. We went from like a dead year to like every TV show and video game coming out in November or December.
I think that's crazy. I'll probably, depending on... Well, we have Thanksgiving this week, so maybe not, but I'm taking Wednesday off, so there's a good chance I'll beat Pentiment this week, because I'm going to be playing a ton of it.
So I'm also probably going to beat several games this week, because I have taken off most of the week off work. I have a couple of meetings that I need to go to, and we have a babysitter part of the week, so I will actually have time to game way more than usual this week, if everything goes as planned, which never does, but... I'm pretty excited about that. I might try and knock out both the Call of Duty campaign and Gotham Knights, and maybe a Plague Tale. But it depends on if I get distracted and play a bunch of Call of Duty multiplayer or Halo Infinite's winter update. Or for some reason, I feel like playing the Destiny 2 campaign that I haven't finished, which, again, I get distracted so easy. I'm just like, oh, I want to play that. Oh, I want to play that. I can't stick to anything. I'm so bad. At least I stuck to Fallout 4. And finished the campaign on that. And now I just have to, I'm going to go back and do the DLC when they do the update next year. But I'm literally a dog with a ball. Like, they throw the ball and it goes over into the bushes, and suddenly I see a squirrel and I forgot the ball existed. So anyway, this has been a long one. Thanks for listening, everyone. With that, we will wrap it up. I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter, although it's kind of imploding, but I think it's going to make it through, at Tim Shelton.
I am Spencer Rain. You can follow me on Twitter at Makes It Rain.
And I am social media-less Gus. But if you have any problems with my opinions, as I'm sure many people do, you can mention us at Multiform Pod on Twitter.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.
New episodes post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can contact us on Twitter at Multiform Pod or by email at questions@multiformpodcast.com. If you enjoyed our show and you're feeling extra generous, please share it with your friends or on social media. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen.